We're going to be in the book of Revelation, chapter 12, verse 7, in just a few moments. But I want to take you to the book of Daniel for a little illustration before we go into my explanation in Revelation chapter 12 again. In Daniel chapter 10, the prophet Daniel has been fasting for 3 weeks because he's been doing some Bible study in the work of Jeremiah. And he sees in there a time limit of 70 years. And he believes that that time limit for Israel, for Israel being in exile in Babylon, should be coming to a close because it's like the 68th or 69th year of their exile. And so Daniel is begging God for clarification. He's asking for additional information. And 21 days into his meditation and Bible study and prayer, an angel shows up. And it says in verse number 12 of Daniel 10 that the angel said to me, this is Daniel telling the story, "Do not be afraid, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart on understanding this and on humbling yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come in response to your words. However, the prince of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me for 21 days." Now, in the text, as it develops, you can tell that it's not talking about a human prince. The word in Hebrew is tsar, and it is a powerful being. This case, an evil powerful being, one of the fallen angels, if you will, was trying to stop this angel from making the message delivery. "He was withstanding me for 21 days. Then behold, Michael, who is like God," is the meaning of his name, "Michael, one of the chief tsar," so one of the top powerful beings, "came to help me, for I had been left there with the kings of Persia." Interesting that the word kings can be used as a synonym for tsar, as in the prince or the powerful being here, because I actually mentioned that in the book of Revelation study already. "Now, I have come to give you an understanding of what will happen to your people," that is to the Jews, "in the latter days," or later days, "for the vision pertains to days yet future." Then he begins to give him an explanation. One of the things that he mentions is that once he gets done providing all this information, look at verse 20, "I shall now return to fight against the prince of Persia." This is the Tsar, the powerful spirit being, fallen angel. "So that I am going forth, and behold, then the prince of Greece is about to come." So apparently another powerful being from the region of Greece is going to be stirring up trouble. "However, I tell you that what is inscribed in the writing of truth, yet there is no one who stands firmly with me against these forces except Michael, your prince," meaning Michael, the archangel who looks after the covenant people, the ethnic group of Israelis that are committed to the truth of God. All right, so in that example, we know that there are spiritual fights going on behind the scenes. You know, we live in a physical dimension, a physical plane, But there are other dimensions that are outside of our senses. And those things are not static. There's always something happening in those dimensions. And what happens there often impacts on what happens here and vice versa. And it involves fallen angels fighting against God's loyal angels. They are fighting over territory. They have apparently strongholds on the other side. The fallen angels have places where they're particularly powerful. Now, why is that? Probably because of the people. Because free will reigns on planet Earth. And the free will choices of people make a difference in the spirit realm around those people. So if you've got a lot of people that are caught up in sin and spiritual lies, then that is going to be a stronghold for the enemy, a stronghold for the fallen Sarim, the fallen angels of power. And so that's why when Daniel is supposed to be getting this message, it takes a while for his messenger to break through to where he's at, because he's in one of those strongholds of the angelic enemy forces. And then that same angel is going to have to break back out again. And who is it that's going to help him in that? Michael, Michael the archangel, because his assignment, his duty assignment, relates to the people of ethnic Israel. And so with that information, let's go back to Revelation chapter 11 or chapter 12, verse number 7, and remind ourselves of what we studied last time. Verse 7 says, "Now war arose in heaven, Michael and his angels fighting against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back." So we've got spiritual warfare going on here. This is not a one-time event that is being spoken of here. This is an ongoing battle. It's been going on ever since Genesis chapter 3. It waxes and wanes. It ebbs and it flows according to the free will choices of people throughout history. There was a particularly nasty climax of it, I think, that revolved around the coming of Jesus to planet Earth the first time, because Satan and his dragon, the dragon Satan and his angels knew that Jesus would arrive in a specific period of time. That's because of Daniel chapter 9. But they didn't know exactly when in that time he would show up. So they were on high alert to try to figure out a way to kill this invader when he showed up on planet Earth. I believe at that time they thought he was going to simply be a super prophet. Turns out it was actually God himself taking on human form. I'm sure that gave quite the twist to the whole story. But nothing was accomplished like they'd hoped. And so Jesus does his ministry, dies voluntarily. I'm sure Satan momentarily thought that he'd won, but he hadn't. Resurrects from the dead, and then he ascends back to glory. We saw all that portrayed in the earlier verses of Revelation chapter 12. So now we go back, starting in verse 7, to the war. It takes on a bit of a different tone now, because the believers that are being watched over have a better understanding of the story, because they know that Jesus is the Messiah. They know how this is playing out, and they know he's coming back again as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. But Michael and his bunch have to keep fighting and fighting and fighting. Particularly Michael is focused on the Israeli people, the ethnic Jews. And then comes the moment we're all waiting for, the final phase. It says, and what we're talking about is the beginning of the day of the Lord, the final 3.5 year period. Why is that so important? Because after that period is finished, that's when Jesus comes. He comes at the end of the day of the Lord, after a 3.5 year period. We keep seeing that number in the prophetic books as being the final confrontation period. And so at the beginning of that 3.5 year period, we know that the sun will go dark, the moon will turn blood red, and the stars will fall from the sky. And we know that stars is a poetic term for angels. And I want you to take that to heart as we move into the next few verses here. Verse number 8 says, "He," meaning the dragon, meaning Satan, "was defeated, and there was no longer any place for them in heaven." And I believe that is literally meant. No more will they be allowed to stay in the supernatural realm. No longer can they stay in the unseen world. They're persona non grata. They're out of there. Verse number 9. "The great dragon was thrown down." And then we have the identifiers. Remember, the Bible gives its own best commentary. "That ancient serpent," so that takes us back to Genesis 3, "who was called the devil," Diabolos, "the slanderer, and Satan," that's Hebrew rather than Greek, and it means the adversary, "the deceiver of the whole world." And we know that his idea is to lie in any way, shape, or form to put a wedge between us and God. And that's also what his troopers, his spiritual troopers, are out there to do as well. "So he was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him." So now we have, I believe, this vision stream's description of what we saw with the breaking of the sixth seal and the stars falling from the sky. I think we have the angels being kicked out of heaven and landing on planet Earth, and that's going to be kind of a freaky thing to see. We have an appreciation, I think, that these angels are very powerful beings in their own dimension. But they are not really designed to be in our dimension, in our physical world. And so I think some of them that might have been able to fly around in their own dimension will be caught in high altitude once they come into our dimension, and they won't be able to fly. I think they are going to plummet to the ground, and it's going to not be pleasant for them, and it'll be a very strange sight to see, especially in mass, because the numbers here are big. How many fallen angels are there in existence? Well, you remember we talked about at the sixth wrath event, the sixth trumpet, that the angels that of God that were involved in the execution of a third of the remaining humanity, the people who had taken the mark of the beast, that number was 200 million. So that's probably not the total of all God's angels. I doubt it. But even if we were to use it as a baseline, a third of that, if you were to take, two-thirds versus one-third, is going to be 100 million. And so we have a lot of fallen angels that we're talking about here suddenly coming into our dimension at the exact same time, and some of them falling from the sky. This will add to the chaos of the beginning of the final 3.5 years that we see described elsewhere. Remember, people will be crying out and scared, and they will be trying to hide themselves in caves and holes in the ground. They'll be running for the fallout shelters, folks, because of all the strange things that will be happening at the beginning of the final 3.5 years. But look back at our text. Let's not get distracted from the event itself. Revelation 12:10. John says, "I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, Now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come, for the accuser of our brothers has been thrown down, who accuses them day and night before our God." When you read in the book of Job, you have a little snapshot or a little snippet of how when Satan appears before God's throne during probably a parole hearing, if you will, he has to basically show good cause that he's behaving himself. He's not breaking any rules. But what is he doing? He says to God, "Well, yeah, that Job fella, the only reason he's good is because you do good things for him. You quit doing that, he'll curse you to his your face. And so what is he doing there? He's accusing Job of being a fraud, being a fake, being non-genuine. That's what Satan is all about. He's the diabolos. He's the slanderer. He says nasty things about every human being and tries to drive a wedge between God and us and between us and God. So that's just what he does. So here, the voice from heaven is celebrating the fact that Satan's reign of terror in the supernatural realm has come to an end. He can't pull strings from behind the curtain anymore. He's been booted out of backstage. He's now front and center in the world of humanity. Verse number 11. They, meaning the salvation people, they have conquered him. They've overcome Satan and all his minions by the blood of the Lamb, so by the fact that they've been saved by the atonement of Jesus, and by the word of their testimony, by the idea that they have not loved their lives even unto death. They've been faithful unto death so that Jesus will give them the crown of life. For they love not their lives even unto death. And then we have this in verse 12. Therefore, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. It's time to celebrate, everybody in the supernatural realm, because Satan and his bunch are now out of here. They've been kicked out. They're no longer present in our dimension, in the supernatural realm we call heaven. They're gone. They've been booted to planet Earth. However, the voice goes on to say this: "Woe to you, earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath." So Satan is ticked. He and his angels with him, they are mad because they are no longer in the spiritual dimension that they've spent their entire existence in. They are out of their environment. And he's also angry because he knows, since he knows this book, which is really weird when you think about it, this line is referencing the fact that he knows this book. Because he knows that his time is short. How short is his time? It's 3.5 years. 42 months. 1,270 days. That's what time he has, because that's how long the day of the Lord is. That's pretty clear throughout all of Scripture. And so Satan knows the clock is ticking, which then makes me think this is a good place for me to explain something. When we talk about the second coming of Jesus, we uphold the idea that we don't know when it is. We have no clue. No man knows the day, an hour of his coming. That's Jesus' own affirmation. And so we teach this idea of the uncertainty about the second coming, the uncertainty of when all of this is going to come to a conclusion. That's now. The moment the sixth seal happens, when the sun goes dark, the moon goes blood red, the stars, the angels are falling from the sky, that will be day one of the day of the Lord. And we know from Scripture that it will be 1,270 days long, 3.5 years, 42 months, all on a Jewish calendar, by the way. And so once that sixth seal is broken, once the day of the Lord begins, we will know precisely when Jesus is coming. But we don't know now, because none of that has happened. And so that is something that you should consider as we go through this passage. Otherwise, it'll confuse you when I'm talking about the idea that we're only a week from Jesus coming whenever the two witnesses are caught up into the heaven. Because we have moved into the final phase of history on planet Earth previous to the second coming. And that time period is precisely detailed. And so once the sun goes dark, moon turns blood red, stars, the angels are falling from the sky, everybody will know exactly when Jesus is coming. There'll be no doubt. Okay, now, Satan is aware of that, and he's angry, and he is not one to give up on being an agent of chaos. As many of you know that are longtime students of mine, I am an Air Force vet, and I served during Gulf War I. And so I was in the Middle East, stationed in Saudi Arabia, just about 100 and some miles south of the Kuwait border, during Desert Storm. And one of the things that happened when all of our forces showed up there is that Saddam Hussein realized that he was not going to be able to keep Kuwait. That he was going to get booted out of there whether he liked it or not. The coalition wouldn't let him stay. And so what did he do? He became an agent of chaos. He decided to trash everything. If I can't have it, nobody gets it intact. And so he was lighting off the oil wells all over the place. The last several weeks that we were stationed there, there was never the sun in the sky. It was always this black cloud because of the oil fires. That's what Satan does. When he realizes that he is no longer in control of the situation from the heavenly realm, he decides to throw the earthly realm into chaos. Verse 13, when the dragon saw that he'd been thrown to the earth, he pursued the woman who had given birth to the male child. Now remember, we've already kind of assigned to her the identity as the ethnic Israelis who are going to be with the two witnesses. So it's not all ethnic Israelis. It's a specific group of ethnic Israelis. And so he goes after the ethnic Israelis nearby where he's at. I think he crash lands in Israel somewhere. And so verse 14, but the woman was given the two wings of the great eagle so that she might fly from the serpent into the wilderness to the place where she was to be nourished for a time and times and half a time. So that's a Hebrew phrase. Time is 1 year. Times is two more years. So that's 3 years together. And half a time is half a year. So that's 3.5 years. And we already heard that she was going to be taken to this place in the wilderness for 1,260 days. And we know that that's the period of time that the two witnesses are going to do their ministry. And so you will not be a bit surprised that I'm going to tell you that the two wings of the great eagle that are referenced here are those two witnesses. I want to give you a passage to kind of back that up. Exodus chapter 19, verse 4. God is speaking through Moses and Aaron, his two witnesses of that day, to the people of Israel. And he says this, "You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians," meaning the plagues, the judgments, the wrath. "You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself." So he's speaking this at Mount Sinai. And who was it that brought them out of Egypt by means of the plagues and to Mount Sinai to introduce them to God? That would be Moses and Aaron. So the two witnesses are the eagle's wings of that period, Moses and Aaron, and that is why I believe that Revelation 12:14 should be understood as a reference to the two witnesses of chapter 11. They are the two wings of the great eagle that bring the woman, the ethnic Israelis, away from Satan and his minions and bring them to a place of security to be there with them for 1,260 days.